case of the morning, the United States versus Aurelia Jimenez.
Good morning, Your Honor. Court, please. My name is Sam Adam. I'm here for the defendant. We have 3 points that we'd like to make. First of all, this case involves the interpretation of a guideline, statute, involving case law. Review is de novo. Secondly, in this case, the district judge took the defendant's submission and then determined that she would not consider it unless it was under oath. Defense counsel objected to that. He said, I won't consider it unless it's under oath. He then testified. Thereafter, the court and the government relied upon the defendant's demeanor in court to sentence the defendant to the high end of the guideline. 71 months was the guideline, and she sentenced him to 68 months. We feel that that is a violation of his right against self-incrimination.
He was charged with fraud of government health benefits, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Millions of dollars by writing phony prescriptions and submitting fraudulent bills to the government?
Correct.
And he pled guilty to 6 counts of mail fraud?
Yes, sir.
And 1 count of contempt, criminal contempt?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And that was a plea agreement that was worked
and
out.
And he was sentenced to 68 months in order to pay $2,760,000 in restitution?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
The case we are asking on that, on the latter basis, the second basis that I just mentioned, to be remanded for resentencing. Now, the third basis is that the guideline says that if he risk or put his patients to the risk of serious bodily injury, he would not be, two points would be added to his sentence determination. The guidelines also describe or define serious bodily injury as 1, extreme physical pain, 2, protracted impairment of a function of a bodily organ or member or mental faculty, or 3, such as requiring medical intervention such as surgery or hospitalization. The court in this case, the district court in this case, said that by prescribing drugs that were not needed, he, quote, created the possibility of all kinds of anatomical reactions. The court also said that the mobilization of the feet by way of casts may have resulted in circulatory problems and so forth. It is our position that those 2 findings by the court, that is anatomical, the possibility of anatomical reactions and circulatory problems and so forth, do not come within the definition of the guidelines as to serious injury or the risk of serious injury. And for that reason also, we're asking that the case be remanded for resentencing. Thank you.
That's your argument?
That's the argument.
All right. Counsel.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Marcia Massey, and I'll be representing the United States in this case. As to the 3 issues that the defendant has raised on appeal.
Could you try to talk louder, please?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. The first issue he raised is that he believes he's entitled to de novo review of these issues. Your Honor, obviously the United States in its brief stated its position on this issue, which is essentially that with regard to the first issue, that the defendant somehow believes he was coerced to testify, thereby violating his Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate himself, that would be subject to plain error. It's subject to plain error for 2 very simple reasons, Your Honors, and that is, 1, it was never raised to the district court, and 2, the defendant voluntarily testified in this matter at the sentencing hearing.
The district court didn't give much choice, though, did he? Did she? I mean, why didn't she say, well, look, if all you want to do is give me an unsworn statement, give me the unsworn statement, I may not give it a lot of weight, but that's all you want to do, that's your choice. I mean, he could have, the defendant could have limited his participation to an unsworn statement, couldn't he?
Well, Your Honor, it's the posture at which this issue was raised. The United States had submitted evidence to the district court in conjunction with its sentencing memorandum. Right. The United States had also presented three witnesses to testify as to these factual issues and dispute regarding these sentencing adjustments. And as this court held in United States versus Koontz, which is cited in the government's brief, if statements in the pre-sentence report are supported by evidence, the defendant must do more than simply deny those statements.
Okay, so suppose he had simply gotten up unsworn statement and said, the government says on most of those cases, I believe it was a question of whether or not on most of those cases he had prescribed drugs that weren't necessary. He says, no, I did it in only one third of the cases, and I did it only on Mondays. Mondays was my cheating day. Suppose he said that, unsworn statement. Now, you don't have to believe it. I don't have to, and certainly Judge Barker didn't have to believe it. But why couldn't he have done that if that was his choice?
Well, Your Honor, as the court is aware, the district court is entitled to broad discretion in how it wants to conduct its sentencing hearing to arrive at the facts in order to make these determinations. And the district court also must have reliable and credible evidence. And as Your Honor pointed out earlier, this is a defendant who had defrauded or built federal health care benefit programs.
I'm not saying she has to believe him. What I'm saying is, why can she control how he presents himself, however? I mean, if he wants to just simply get up and make an unsworn statement, why can't he do that? Any jurisdictions certainly allow a defendant to do that. That's why I can't find any chapter or verse that says in a federal sentencing proceeding, defendant can't do that.
Your Honor, the defendant did state that he wanted to make a statement to the court, and his counsel did tell the judge, I have two options here. I can put the defendant on the stand, or I could bring my own expert in. The court didn't dictate to the defendant how he should conduct the evidentiary portion of the sentencing hearing. The defendant is the one who elected to take the stand to discuss these issues with the court. The court had been given substantial evidence supporting the government's view of the factual issues regarding these potential sentencing enhancements. And so a defendant's unsworn statement, the judge certainly has the right to reject in light of this.
She certainly can reject it and give it no weight whatsoever, but can she prevent him from making it? Or limiting himself in that regard, saying that's the only way I want to rebut this, Your Honor, I'm going to make an unsworn statement.
Your Honor, I don't believe that the district court was so clear in her rejection of that statement.
Gee, I thought she was terribly definitive. Judge Barker wants to make a point. She can make a point.
That is very true, Your Honor. However, she did simply tell the defendant it was an unsworn statement, and she stated that she didn't find it particularly helpful with regard to these factual issues.
Would you believe that this is somewhat like any other evidentiary hearing where the district judge can require them to put on sworn testimony?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's not necessarily an incorrect statement. Basically, once the government has put forth evidence supporting its version of the facts and its basis for why these upward adjustments are appropriate under the facts of the case, the defendant does have a burden of persuasion, if you will, to come forth with evidence to say why his version of the facts should be the one that the judge adopts for sentencing purposes. The judge had been given a mountain of evidence concerning why the sentencing was appropriate.
Didn't the judge ask the defendant or state to the defendant that she needed evidence to support his objections to the pre-sentence report?
Yes, she did, Your Honor. And that's not inappropriate under the law of the circuit, that evidence must be presented. And that the district court...
She said she couldn't consider it as evidence unless it was under oath.
She did state that, Your Honor. However, she stated that, I do believe, in light of the totality of the sentencing hearing, which was she had been presented with a lot of other evidence. She had a defendant that she had before her on many occasions.
Is the statement in isolation a correct statement of the law, though?
I'm sorry, which statement,
that
Your Honor?
The statement the judge just read. Is that statement taken in isolation a correct statement of the law?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. However, any potential error, even if there is an error in this record, is a harmless one. The defendant took the stand. He got three levels downward in his sentence for acceptance of responsibility, and he cannot show that his taking the stand somehow prejudiced him in any way. He testified as to his view of the disputed facts. The judge found, in fact, at the end of the sentencing hearing, that this was one of the most egregious cases she had ever seen. She also stated that just prior to coming onto the bench, that she wondered if the sentencing guideline range was enough, because she had experience with this defendant. She had experience with what she called his lack of candor and his foot dragging.
Can you detail on what basis did she make those statements? What was her earlier contact?
Your Honor, there was a civil case in which the defendant's assets were frozen pursuant to an injunction under 18 U.S.C. Section 1345. That injunction was violated on numerous occasions. The United States brought the defendant into court, and in fact, the underlying injunction formed the basis for the criminal contempt count, because the defendant was not to buy property pursuant to this injunction, but yet he went out and did so without advising his probation officer or seeking permission from the court. So Judge Barker had
some statement, as I recall, about the fact that he had shown at the end some improvement, but had improvement had been at a snail's pace or something to that effect.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, which is why the defendant's taking the stand benefited him, because he was able to get acceptance of responsibility. The judge had seen him periodically and had found him to be less than truthful with the court. However, at the juncture at which he testified at the sentencing hearing, she found that he had come far enough along that he should get acceptance of responsibility.
And she did not go to the max on the guideline, did she?
No, she did not, Your Honor. The maximum guideline, as you point out, was 71 months, and she sentenced him to 68 months, based upon her belief that this was one of the most egregious cases she had seen, that the fraud wasn't just simply a quick hit, but that it had gone on for a long period of time and, as you pointed out, involved quite a bit of money, federal money that should have been spent for health care for people who should have gotten it. With regard to the adjustment for the conscious or reckless risk of serious bodily injury, Judge Barker correctly found that that adjustment applied in this case. She had heard evidence that one of the defendant's patients, Carolyn Hancock, had been prescribed anti-anxiety medication by Dr. Jimenez, which is outside the scope of podiatric medicine, and that that individual subsequently committed suicide on an overdose of Xanax, this anti-anxiety medication. Ms. Hancock's doctor had called Dr. Jimenez and advised him of her condition, and yet even with this knowledge, he continued to prescribe Xanax to this patient. That's clearly a conscious and reckless risk of serious bodily injury that he has created. Further, there was I see my time is running short, but there was also evidence in the record to suggest that Dr. Jimenez essentially created addicts with his routine prescription of painkillers, and that those individuals could suffer, according to Dr. Schlichter, the government's expert, any number of liver problems or systemic problems. So that upward adjustment was definitely appropriate under the evidence that was presented to Judge Barker, and we would urge this court to affirm the sentence in all respects.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Very briefly, if Your Honor, please. I hate to read the guidelines to the court, because the court can read them for itself, but 1B1.4 says, in determining the sentence to impose within the guideline range or whether a departure from the guideline is warranted, the court may consider without limitation any information concerning the background, character, and conduct of the defendant unless prohibited by law. The statute, 18 U.S.C. section 3661, says, no limitation shall be placed on the information concerning the background, character, or conduct of a person convicted of an offense, which a court of the United States may receive and consider for the purpose of imposing an appropriate sentence. The court was clearly wrong in requiring that this be under oath.
What about the use of the word may there? Does that give the district court some discretion?
I think not in light of the statute. I thought it may, standing alone, an argument might be presented. But I think not in view of the statute.
Well, it doesn't describe how that evidence is received, though. It just merely says it's available and you can consider it, but it doesn't say whether it has to be under oath or not.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And in this court, in this case, the district court refused to consider it unless it was under oath.
Because she had had prior experience with it.
Whatever her reason was, I think that she was in error in doing so, even in spite of the prior experience.
If you know that the person has been before you civilly and lied under oath, that you don't want him to testify now.
No, I do
want it under oath because you'll get accurate information.
I agree, and I think she can consider the past as well as the present. But if he chooses not to submit it under oath,
then she could have just said, "Fine, we won't proceed with the plea agreement. It's set aside. Let's go to trial."
That is a possibility, I suppose, but the agreement was there. It's merely, there was never any question about vacating
the... Set aside the agreement and go right to trial.
I understand, Your Honor, but there was never any question below about that happening. The only question was, will you consider the submission or not unless it's under oath? And I think with all due respect, I think the district court erred.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. Thank you all for your...